Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
And collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we will be talking about magic mushrooms.
Well, you got me hooked at mushrooms, but magic mushrooms?
Yeah, that's what some people call them. Magic mushrooms are wild or cultivated mushrooms that contain something called psilocybin, which is a naturally occurring psychoactive and hallucinogenic compound. Psilocybin is classified as a Schedule 1 drug, meaning that it has a high potential, no pun intended, for misuse, and it has no currently accepted medical use in treatment in the United States. Classic psychedelic drugs include LSD, mescaline, psilocybin, which we just mentioned, and another one called ayahuasca, if I'm pronouncing it right. These are plant-based psychedelics, have long been used in indigenous cultures around the world. In 2018, researchers from Johns Hopkins University recommended reclassification of psilocybin from Schedule 1 to Schedule 4 in order to allow it for medical use. Researchers at Johns Hopkins found that the psilocybin was an effective treatment for depression and nicotine and alcohol addictions, as well as other substance use disorders. Studies have shown that magic mushrooms were effective at relieving the emotional distress of people with life-threatening cancer diagnoses. And one study found that people who self-medicated with small doses of psilocybin were able to relieve cluster headaches while avoiding any psychoactive effects of the drug. The Center for Psychedelic and Consciousness Research at Johns Hopkins, they're also researching how psychedelics affect a variety of conditions such as Alzheimer's disease, anorexia nervosa, opioid addiction, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, we have the pleasure today of having Del Jolly on our show, and he has quite a bit of knowledge on this subject. Del, he's the co-founder of UMBO, which is the Unlimited Sciences and Expert in Functional Mushrooms. The research at Unlimited Sciences collects real-world data on psychedelic use so that we can more quickly understand how to use these drugs safely and effectively for our health and overall well-being. Welcome to our podcast, Del.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this stuff.
Well, we're really excited to have you on the show. And before we get into the science of this, let me ask you, what first got you involved in this field?
Well, my plant medicine journey started with CBD, which I think a lot of people are becoming very aware of. I worked for a company called Charlotte's Web, which is the largest CBD company in the world, I believe. They kind of started this movement, in my opinion, back in 2012, if you remember a story on CNN with Dr. Sanjay Gupta, little girl having seizures and them introducing cannabis or CBD into her feeding tube at the time, and she stopped having seizures.
Right.
This changed my mind as someone who was opposed to marijuana and cannabis. I just didn't know. I'm a DARE kid, and I saw these families who were really struggling to try to change narratives and let people understand that this was a safe and effective option for their children. And it really just changed my life because I held such a strong conviction in something that was miseducation. And then that just really snowballed into looking into all plant medicines and fungi medicines, including psilocybin mushrooms. So that's where I got my start into this whole journey.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the Reagan administration.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Hey, Del, this is Ron. And again, thank you for joining us. At the beginning, we covered a few facts about recent studies in this quite unique field. Can you share some stuff with our listeners, how you actually obtained the chemical compound in these magic mushrooms? And how is it regulated and how is it controlled for safety?
Sure. And so, as you'd mentioned, there's a lot of studies happening in Johns Hopkins and many universities throughout the nation. Matter of fact, we're seeing a huge shift in fundraising at universities and academic institutions where they're raising lots of money to open up psychedelic wings in their facilities so they could start studying and better understanding this. And so a lot of these studies that we see and are referencing are in controlled settings at these universities like Johns Hopkins. They're using synthetic psilocybin, this pure psilocybin that's made in a lab. That's what they're using with their patients. And then we also see, I was also part of the Decrim Denver movement that happened in Denver, May 7th, 2019, 3-year anniversary just passed. Denver decriminalized the possession of psilocybin in its district. Oh. And what that means is law enforcement is no longer prosecuting people for possession of, you know, smaller amounts of psilocybin. And so now people are accessing it that way. People are growing it their own. Obviously, there's a very long traditional history use of psilocybin. You know, Oaxaca, Mexico is kind of the birthplace of indigenous use. And so humans have been using mushrooms forever. It's only the last 100 years that we've kind of said no to that anymore. And so people are obtaining it. They're obtaining it illegally. That's obviously one way, and it's the way it's been done forever, the same way, you know, bootleg alcohol used to be back in the day. Mm-hmm. And they're growing it their own selves. And so there's ways that people are going about utilizing these substances, but they've always used it. They always will, no matter what the laws are. And so that's kind of how I came to use psilocybin mushrooms.
Okay. And I can see where, you know, changing the legal status and making it available through reputable
researchers,
right. And, you know, through a reputable marketplace system, and then having it so that it's standardized and all of that could regulated. Be a benefit to people, right, that would like to try to use it. And I know this kind of reminds me of ketamine. And when we talked with Travis Mills, who's a quad amputee veteran, and he said that, you know, he was really, again, against it and thought it wasn't something for him. And then he did try it, and he said it was the biggest life-changing thing that he had done, and that it really let him, you know, move on and become the person he is today. So it is fascinating. But I am curious, are there any potential negative side effects or concerns we should have if we're considering using psilocybin?
Sure, absolutely. I just want to state, I happen to know Travis Mills, really fantastic guy. And I know David Vibor, who started the Adaptive Training Foundation with him.
Right.
So shout out to that wonderful group helping veterans. But yeah, there certainly are some negative effects to psilocybin.
Okay.
Obviously, it induces a mental state that can be very unnerving, you know, hallucinations, things of that nature. Physiologically, mm-hmm. psilocybin is the safest drug in on all drugs.
Okay.
There's an LD50 that scientists put to a substance. That means lethal dose at 50% of the population that dies when you know, they take mice and they give them a substance. They give 100 mice a substance and 150 of them die. That's the LD50 of the drug. Okay. So, you know, fentanyl is like 2 milligrams. It's a very, very small amount that can be very lethal for the mice. Mm-hmm. The LD50 of psilocybin mushrooms, you'd have to eat like 32 pounds of fresh mushrooms to potentially die.
Okay.
So physiologically, they're incredibly safe. Psychologically, they could be very unnerving. People with a history of mental health issues should be very leery and really understand what they're getting into. And in that, quite honestly, we're finding, you know, the power of the mind is pretty immense, and we're just starting to dive into it. I feel that mind is the last frontier. And I think that psychedelics are kind of the covered wagon that could kind of take us through and better understand our minds. And so when you're inducing these states, and if you've had a past of mental illness, that could be fairly disruptive. But, you know, with Hopkins, the safety profile, it's pretty tremendous. They do, you know, 6 weeks of cognitive behavioral therapy before they allow the subjects to use the psilocybin, which makes them very, very prepared for what we talk about, set and setting, if you've heard that. You know, a lot of people take psilocybin or they've had it in the past and they said, oh, I did magic mushrooms in college and it was just weird and I didn't like it. We laughed a lot or whatever, but I don't recall these mystical experiences that we keep hearing about. I truly believe that's absolutely based on the way you're approaching these substances with the set and setting. And that's what Unlimited Sciences is trying to verify, that when you put an intention behind this use, mm-hmm. it changes the outcomes. It changes what happens, you know, mentally, and it allows you to overcome some of the issues that you may be having. So certainly dangerous when it comes to mental health, but overall an incredibly safe drug.
So if I understand you correctly, Del, what you're saying is that if it is used under advisement, under supervision with someone that understands what you're going to be going through, and they guide you basically through the experience, that you would have a completely different outcome than if you took it on your own willy-nilly without any guidance or direction. And that's what the set and setting is, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And so, you know, Oregon legalized psilocybin, and they're going through what the rules and regulations will look like to mm-hmm. sit with a therapist legally and take psilocybin. This happened in 2019 as well. Still trying to figure out what that model is. And those settings are incredibly powerful, because whoever's coming to it, you know, they're paying a therapist, they're taking it serious. The therapist probably understands how to work with them on whatever it is they're trying to overcome.
Right.
But I don't want to minimize community use in the sense of, you know, indigenous people mm-hmm. have been using this forever. We can learn so much from that history of use mm-hmm. and what they gain from it, the effects of that. I think that it's very much your mindset and how you're approaching it. And if you're doing it with the right people or the right therapist, mm-hmm. it could be very, very effective. I personally don't think that this should only live with one therapist and one person. It's a very complicated subject, mm-hmm. but again, a nod to the indigenous use, they don't do it on a couch at Johns Hopkins,
right,
you know,
right.
And they've had a lot of success in the indigenous people who have died carrying this medicine. We need to honor the history of their use by acknowledging what they did was actually pretty damn effective, right? Mm-hmm. And so if it is very new to you, whatever's safest for you, and if that's a therapist, absolutely, I'm all about that. The issue I see is Johns Hopkins has been giving psilocybin. They've got their DEA Schedule 1 license, I think, in 2000. They've been studying this and providing medicine to their patients since 2000. I think, I've got to get this number right, but I think they've had maybe 700 people go through that clinic in 22 years.
Okay.
Maybe more, and I apologize if it is. However, the point is 700 people are using psilocybin right now today.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Out in the wild.
Oh, okay. Sure.
You know, and so to better understand that is important.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Understood.
And I know that there are some specific conditions that might want to, you know, make sure you talk it over with your healthcare provider, because if you have, you know, like a high, if you have a high, naturally, high BP, your blood pressure is too high, or if you have an issue regulating body temperature or heart rate, then, you know, that might be a concern. But thank you. That was a very thorough explanation.
Yeah. Hey, Del, I wanted to follow up. You alluded to it just a minute ago. How's the federal classification of drugs like psilocybin? How does that affect research?
Yeah, it makes it very difficult. These universities or lab that are trying to study it have to apply for a DEA Schedule 1 license to do so. And there are so many hoops to go through to get that and do that. And there was tremendous efforts being put forth on studying psychedelics in the 50s and 60s, particularly LSD for alcoholism, before that was shut down. And so the federal government, you know, in the Nixon era, started the drug war and squashed all the research that was kind of happening that was leading to some really interesting results. And they scheduled they made psilocybin and cannabis are Schedule I narcotics, which means they are highly addictive and there is zero medical benefit to them. I think anybody who is paying any sort of attention understands that there's tremendous medical use for cannabis, and we're seeing the same with magic mushrooms. And when you're talking about mushrooms for treating addiction and people who use mushrooms intentionally and well, you do this very rarely. It is not addictive. It is not an enjoyable experience if you're there to do, quote unquote, the work, right? If you're there to try to work on whatever issue it is that you're trying to get through, it's very, very uncomfortable. And I don't know a ton of people who are super excited to use psilocybin. You know, it's a lot of people doing that tends to be more of a recreational, you know, concert dose, if you will. But using it for therapy, usually it's higher doses. It invokes uncomfortable things that sometimes it's hard to face, as when your default mode network in your brain gets shut down by psilocybin, it allows you to, you know, reach into the depths that are too uncomfortable while you're quote unquote sober, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So there's a lot of, I think that DEA scheduling is highly incorrect. Meth is a Schedule II narcotic.
Wow.
So cannabis and psilocybin are safer than meth, according to our federal government. Cocaine as well. Cocaine is a Schedule II. So Johns Hopkins' efforts to try to make it a Schedule IV is a much more responsible scheduling of that substance.
Okay. All right.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, Del, do you personally have experience using these psychedelic substances?
Yes, I do. I've used quite a few of them to experience them and understand them. It's provided deep healing for me. It has helped me be a better father. It's helped me be a better husband. It's helped me analyze a lot of the things that maybe have happened in my youth. Psilocybin in particular has been important. Ayahuasca is a plant medicine that's used in South America. Thousands of years of use of that substance. There's other substances like 5-methoxydimethyltryptamine, which is known as the toad medicine. There's a toad that produces 5-MeO, and that is a very powerful substance as well. And so I have tried these substances. I believe in their power. I believe that they should be responsibly used, and people should really do their homework and be prepared if they're about to partake in these substances. But I 100% believe that we will see a humongous change in the medical system, and it will be based on mental health utilizing psychedelics.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Del, what can be done to improve the public's perception of the safety and efficacy of psilocybin?
So Unlimited Sciences, again, with our study with Johns Hopkins to show that people are utilizing these substances and they're doing it responsibly. I'll give you one particular stat that I've provided to the city of Denver. When we passed that initiative in 2019, mm-hmm. we also passed a review panel. Hey, how is this, you know, quote unquote natural history experiment affecting the city of Denver?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we have been able to provide them statistics to show that the quality of life of Denverites seemingly is improving, mm-hmm. you know? And so the movements that are happening with an organization called Decrim Nature to go to city council members and to decriminalize these substances has been very, very effective. I think we're at 15 cities have done this in the last 3 years, and there's hundreds that are going through the motions of trying to change this. But going to the city council members and providing them data, one of the stats that I was going to quote is that the average use of the over 7,000 people who have enrolled in our study mm-hmm. is 39 and a half years old. So that just tells me, you know, this isn't kids who mm-hmm. are, you know, running around playing and, you know, having a few grams, you know, and the qualitative and quantitative data that we're seeing back, the reports of how this is affecting and helping people, I think that that data, when we start publishing this, mm-hmm. will really be able to help city council members understand that this is a safe and effective and ultimately raising the quality of life of citizens.
Just like ketamine, right? I mean, ketamine.
Or cannabis.
Or cannabis. I mean, it takes time for the general public to change gears and accept things. But I think the research is what starts it. And then once people see that the research is sound and there's and it's regulated and safe, I think people would come around. I know I'm putting my hand up.
Yeah,
I'm ready to try anything.
I think there's two types of people to convince someone. There's the white coats. This is the mm-hmm. academic institutes that are doing very controlled studies and publishing sound data, which is incredibly important. And then there's the charlatans of the world. A little girl who's having seizures, and they introduce cannabis, and it's like, hey, yeah. I have three kids, and if anybody takes that away from my child, mm-hmm. when it's incredibly safe, and it's the only thing that helps them, that's not okay.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, there's a lot of athletes who are coming out. I work at Umbo, which is our functional mushroom company. I work with Jake Plummer, who's the quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals and the Denver Broncos, and Rashad Evans, who is a UFC Hall of Fame light heavyweight champ back in the day. These guys take care of their body. They know what it takes to perform, and they are starting to understand that mushrooms, psilocybin and functional mushrooms, are really important for health. You know, the functional mushrooms, which are completely legal, this is an entire food group that most of us don't eat. Most of us don't. There's mycophobia in the United States.
Right.
We don't eat mushrooms.
Right.
If I were to tell you, you know, 100 years ago, hey, vegetables aren't good, you shouldn't eat them, it'd be hard to reintroduce broccoli, because let's face it, broccoli's not the most, you know, palatable deal. But if you kept eating your vegetables, you'd start feeling changes. You'd start feeling better. And that's what I think functional mushrooms will lead to as well. So people will have the statistical data that's important, and then they'll have stories,
right,
you know, and
right.
important stories
well,
that will help.
Being from a family of mushroom hunters, I am all for
yes.
everything supporting mushrooms. And while we're on that topic, can you give our listeners a quick synopsis of the difference between functional mushrooms and magic mushrooms?
Absolutely. So I kind of think of it as three categories, and not all mushrooms fit into just one. But you have three categories. You have gourmet mushrooms. This is what we're most, you know, familiar with. You know, mushroom on pizza, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's your, or portobellas. That's what you're ordering at a restaurant. Functional mushrooms are mushrooms that provide health benefits, have been used and are provided, you know, in Japan. If you get a cancer diagnosis, they'll also prescribe you turkey tail mushrooms for gut health to help with your immune system while you're overcoming chemo. So turkey tail, reishi, lion's mane, chaga, these functional mushrooms are 100% legal, have been very well studied, very much a part of Asian culture and European culture. So that's functional mushrooms. Or, you know, lion's mane, which can also fit in the category of a gourmet mushroom, because mm-hmm. you could eat them. They're really mm-hmm. delicious. They're also for cognitive health and nerve growth factors in your brain for lion's mane. That's functional. And then, so that would also lead to medicinal. But as all these laws change and all these cities and states start to change their regulations around how they treat magic mushrooms, psilocybin, that will live in its own category as medical mushrooms. That's the way I kind of see this rolling out.
Okay.
Gourmet, functional, and medicinal.
Okay,
and
great.
I think here in the U.S., I know when I think of functional mushrooms, I think of Dr. Andrew Weil.
Yep.
And I mean, he's like, you know, been all about that for years and years, and
psychedelics too.
Yeah, so
he's a huge psychedelic proponent.
Yeah, he's the person I would think of as
okay.
leading the way.
Well, we'll have to put a link for him too. Mm-hmm. All right, and Del, what does the future of research regarding psilocybin look like?
There's so much. There's so much. You listed a few topics that are being looked at. You know, anorexia, cluster headaches, smoking cessation, you know, treatment-resistant depression. The potential is limitless, I think. because I think a lot of disease is very much a cognitive issue. And how are you mentally approaching life, and you know, stress is causing disease. And sometimes stress could be mitigated if you were more comfortable in your skin around some other things, you know. So again, major academic institutions are raising millions upon millions of dollars, opening huge wings that are dedicated to psychedelic research. This is the wave of the future for medicine. I truly believe that. And I think we will see an incredible shift in the next 10 years of how people are approaching this. And what is available to the public, and it's going to be a big snowball. So there's a lot to come.
Do you think it will end up only a manufactured, you know, a synthetic form rather than a grown, just for the stability and reliability of it?
I certainly hope not. Okay, I 100% support that
the natural
modality. Uh-huh. I think that it is. I support the natural, but I also support the synthetic. You know, we want to have a really fantastic way to measure these things. And you can't do that with wild grown psilocybin or, you know, homegrown psilocybin. There's too many compounds in there. That being said, it's just like cannabis. THC, you know, I always think of it when I was working with Charlotte's Web and the CBD movement. Cannabidiol is one molecule amongst thousands in the cannabis plant, right? You have terpenes, you have bioflavins, you have cannabinoids, all these various constituents in the plant. And if you isolate just one, that's what Western medicine does. And that's not the way to approach these complicated plants.
Sure.
And so psilocybin is the same thing. There's baocysteine in it. There's a lot of different compounds inside of psilocybin that needs to probably be included in whatever happens. And at the end of the day, I am a huge proponent for quote unquote healthy normals, people who don't have anything that they're trying to diagnose, but they still want to participate in psilocybin and understand what it is, you know, whether it's the expansion of their minds. And that's another, you know, when you talk about the later future, right now we're healing with psilocybin. I believe the future of psilocybin is the expansion of understanding very complicated problems that are affecting our world. And I think the future is having a scientist in a lab with a bunch of peers who are supporting them in their ideas. They utilize a psilocybin trip, and their studies already showing that, you know, after they come down, there's a window of time that they are incredibly creative. You know, Carrie Mullis, the gentleman who created the PCR test, which we've been seeing a lot of with COVID, he attributes his breakthrough in understanding the polychain reaction from a LSD trip.
Wow.
You know, Steve Jobs from Apple Phones said that he came up with ideas for the phone via psilocybin or psychedelic trips.
Wow.
And so there's a lot to be had outside of just your diagnosis of one medical issue.
Right, right. I understand that. Have you heard of any usage religiously, or have you studied that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. And those are things that hopefully we've had people who are utilizing it in a religious ceremony in our study to verify that. Ayahuasca, the Peruvian South American medicine, is very much that traditional use. There's churches in the United States that are fighting with the government to have shipments of ayahuasca released by customs because it's a religious use. And I believe in that as well. So in Oregon's really kind of going through that as well with how that model is to shape up.
Right. Expanding your mind, right?
Yep. Yep. It's a very complicated yet wonderful thing that we're stepping into, in my humble opinion.
Well, interesting.
And Del, as you said, it's very complicated.
It is.
So if our listeners, if they want to learn more about you, your company, the research, and psilocybin, where can they go?
You go to unlimitedsciences.org. That's where our study is. It's very much been a recruitment platform for our study, which actually has ended. We are actually starting a brand new study with Dr. Robin Carr Harris, who was from Imperial College. He's in San Francisco now, really tremendous academic. And we're doing a study with Saudi Arabian female refugees who are utilizing ayahuasca So that's our next study that we're working on. But, you know, Johns Hopkins, their psychedelic research center, has a lot of studies that they publish there. The internet could be a dangerous place, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a lot of bad information out there. So I would just say, you know, searcher beware.
Right.
You
right,
know,
right.
But there's a lot of very good information out there and some tremendous resources for people to better understand if this is something that they should participate in.
Okay. And we'll include links yes. on our website for this sure. episode as well.
For sure.
Well, this certainly has been very, very insightful. And Del, thank you so much for coming on and talking about psilocybin today.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it and hope your listeners find some value in this and are able to research this for themselves and understand if this is a modality they'd like to approach.
Right, right. We like to provide opportunities options. For yes. and options for everyone. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Del. And as always, if you have any questions or comments related to today's show, you can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, on our website, podcastdx.com. We're on Facebook, Meta, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, TikTok, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
We are everywhere. Looking over your shoulder. Oh, wait. if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.